Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, SiriusXM, Channel 375, and the always free Odyssey app. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476 is the number to jump on in. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Carter Verhaeghe from the Florida Panthers, he's going to join us coming up in 20 minutes from now. We will chat it up with him, Mr. Clutch, as he just continues to score big goal after big goal. And he did have the game winner as the Florida Panthers did close out the Carolina Hurricanes to make it three consecutive trips to the Stanley Cup Final. And they look to go back-to-back, and they will see the Oilers once again, a team that they were up 3-0 on last year. Then the Oilers tied it up at 3-3. And then you did have Verhaeghe getting the first goal in that game seven. And eventually the Panthers did go on not only to win that game, but that won them the Stanley Cup. So that series will get underway on Wednesday out in Edmonton, as you will have the Panthers up against the Oilers. So we'll check in with Carter Verhaeghe coming up 20 minutes from now. In the NBA Finals, they don't get started until Thursday, but you will see that NBA Finals get underway in Oklahoma as you have the Oklahoma City Thunder going up against the Indiana Pacers. And that's where we start the show today. And it's what happened on Saturday night between the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks. As we know that the Pacers took a commanding 3-1 series lead. The Knicks gave you a good effort here in New York to get their first victory in this series at home to make it 3-2. And then it all unraveled for the New York Knicks, really in that third quarter. It was a four-point game at halftime. OG Anunoby hits that shot right at the buzzer to get it to four. It wasn't like the Knicks were playing great, but they were right in striking distance, only being down by four. And I texted my buddy Jeff, who's a huge Knicks fan, and I said to him, I go, they got to survive the first 4 minutes of the third quarter, because you know the Pacers are going to come out with a run. The Pacers are going to go try to really stick it to the New York Knicks, and the Knicks just couldn't survive the early stages of the third quarter. And by the time the third quarter end, I don't care what they got it down to in the fourth quarter, you never felt like the Knicks were going to be able to make a run to go win that game. And that's just what happens. Like, you in the NBA playoffs, it's crazy that the New York Knicks were able to come back from down 23 times. 1-2 up against the Boston Celtics. And then you did get to see them come back from down 20 points in what was game number three up against the Indiana Pacers. But, you know, you keep on touching the stove eventually a few times, right? You didn't get burned the first time. Oh, and your mom tells you, don't touch the stove again. Oh, you didn't get burned the second time. Oh, you know, you didn't get burned the third time. And then the fourth time, the stove is eventually on, and then you get your hands burned. And that's what kept on happening with the Knicks. They were playing with fire, and eventually they got burned. And the Indiana Pacers were the better team. You know, I know you may have more recognizable stars than the New York Knicks, but the Indiana Pacers were the better team, and you just saw it as the games did go on, or even early on in this series, the amount of open three-point shots that the Indiana Pacers got, or even when the Knicks would maybe start to create some momentum, and the Knicks would have like a big bucket, or they would have a nice thunderous slam, the Pacers instantly would get the ball right back up the court before you could even process and celebrate what you just did. Basically, you would high-five your buddy. Oh, the Knicks just made a nice play. And by the time you were done high-fiving, the Pacers were already slamming the ball into the bucket, and then the Knicks had the ball going right back up the court. So Indiana was the better team. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it. And you look back at the Pacers-Knicks series, I thought the voters got it right. Halliburton is a phenomenal player. Put respect on his name. The fact that he was voted a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, whatever it was, as the most overrated player in the league after taking the team to the conference finals a year ago was a bunch of jackassery. He showed you in this series why he's not an overrated player, and now he has the Indiana Pacers in a series where most people won't pick the Indiana Pacers and they'll take the Oklahoma City Thunder, but you need to put respect on the Pacers' names. And it starts with Halliburton. Carlisle, even though he's won a championship, I don't think he gets the amount of praise that he should. And now he has another team in the NBA Finals. But I thought the voters did get it right, given the MVP trophy, the Larry Bird trophy, to Pascal Siakam. And here's a point that I think a lot of people miss. In game one, that's where everyone says, oh, that's where the Knicks lost the series. Obviously, you want to win that game. When you're up 14 with 2:45 to play, when you're up 9 points with 51 seconds to play, and you're at home, even if you're on the road, you got to win that game. But it was the response in game two is where the Knicks really lost this series. Because you could afford to lose one at home. You could afford to have a heartbreaking, all-time gag job, just choke defeat at home. Right? They choked that game away. They had victory, and the Pacers snatched victory from the jaws of defeat. The New York Knicks could have survived the rest of this series, and they could have been playing in a game seven tonight if they would have just won game two. Because if you lose game one, even though it was gut-wrenching, even though it was an abysmal performance, even though it was a pathetic performance from the final 2:45 of that basketball game, and even in overtime, they got out to like a five-point lead. And you had the missed goaltending and then the three in the corner that cut it to two. There were moments for the Knicks, even when they basically got to overtime, to still win that game one. But in game two, you were at home. You had a chance to tie up this series at one apiece. And even though game one will be the one that's most recognized by Knicks fans as that's where the series was over, I really think it was more so game two. Because game two was a repeat of, oh, you lost again. And if it would have been 1-1, think about it this way. If it would have been 1-1 and they would have won game two, you split in Indiana, which you did, and then it's 2-2 going back to the Garden, you win game five, maybe the Pacers give you a little bit of a better effort, and then you lose game six, which you just did, and then you're playing in game seven tonight. So I know you could sit there and go, oh, Zach, you could do the same thing if they would have just won game one and then lost game two, but they lost game one, and then to follow it up with losing both at home for the first time punching your ticket to the conference final since 2000, and you lose both those games at home, that's where the Knicks really lost the series. It was game two. And you look at game two, who was the best player on the court? Pascal Siakam, and it wasn't even close. He had 39 points in the game. So I was more than fine with the performances that Pascal Siakam gave you, also what he did in game four and how just stupid good he was in the first half in game six. I thought it was the right call that Siakam was going to win the MVP. I just thought that maybe the writers would give it to the best player on the Pacers, and the best player on the Pacers is Tyrese Haliburton. So I'm glad that they got it right. You're going by the value of the award. It's the Eastern Conference Finals most valuable player. Night in and night out, I thought the most valuable player for the Indiana Pacers was Pascal Siakam. But off of that, you know, you look at the Pacers and the Knicks and just doing a little aftermath, and as the week goes on, we'll touch more on the NBA Finals. I sit here today, my gut tells me Thunder will win this in six, but today's not really the day to preview Pacers and Thunder in the NBA Finals. We got Tuesday, we got Wednesday, we got heck even Thursday when it gets underway throughout the show to really do a deep dive on that. But let's take it from the other way. We already praised the Pacers. You look at the Knicks. I think that everyone, whenever someone loses, they try to find one person to scapegoat. And I don't think here you could just give me one person. And I usually don't say this. I'm usually fine blaming it on one person. And whoever strikes a nerve with that one person, that's who I usually go after when we're doing these kind of segments in these runs that come to an end. But you look at the Knicks. I think too much criticism has been directed towards Karl Anthony Towns. Like, don't get me wrong. His defense is non-existent. And there are times he is bitching and complaining about fouls where he should get his ass back on defense. And he takes some mind-numbing, frustrating shots. But Karl Anthony Towns, a few times this postseason, showed you the killer instinct of what Karl Anthony Towns is capable of. You know, in game four, up against the Boston Celtics. Heck, in game five as well when they closed them out. Or no, it was in game six, excuse me, where they closed them out. You then look back up against the Indiana Pacers. I thought Karl Anthony Towns was phenomenal in the fourth quarter. He had 20 points, in that fourth quarter of game three. So I get what people will say, but Zach, that's the problem. You're talking about three moments with Karl Anthony Towns. Karl Anthony Towns needs to do that more often. I'm not sugarcoating this. I'm not saying that Karl Anthony Towns played a good series. His defense has to be better. But to say they lost this series just because of Karl Anthony Towns, I think is ridiculous. And to say that the Knicks lost this series just because of Tom Thibodeau as well is equally, if not more, ridiculous. Like, any Knicks fan today that's saying Tom Thibodeau needs to be fired, who are you bringing in? You're not getting rid of Tom Thibodeau and bringing in Michael Malone. I get it. Malone has a championship. He's a New Yorker. Blah, 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 blah. They're too similar in their personalities. It's like most of the times in football, you fire an offensive coordinator, became a head coach. You usually bring in a defensive mind to head coach. That's usually what you do. If the Knicks are getting rid of Tom Thibodeau, outside of Jay Wright, who I don't think is taking the job, by the way, the Knicks would hire a young player-friendly coach. That's what they would do. But Tom Thibodeau, for crying out loud, was the first coach in this organization since 1995 to win back-to-back 50-win seasons. He took this team to the conference finals for the first time since 2000. He was miraculous. He was sensational up against Joe Mazzulla, who just won the NBA championship a year ago. Did Rick Carlisle get outplayed? Did Rick Carlisle outcoach Tom Thibodeau? Absolutely. But the Knicks also got outplayed by the Indiana Pacers. Like, you look around, Jalen Brunson was not great in the conference finals. Mikal Bridges, that's actually the person that frustrates me the most here, if I'm being honest. Because Mikal Bridges was brought in to be a two-way star. Now, is he worth the 5 first-round picks that they gave up for him? Absolutely not. But you look at Mikal Bridges, he needed to be a two-way star. And sure, you could point to me for the defensive efforts in game 1 and 2 up against the Boston Celtics, but too many times on offense, he's absolutely lost. And you can't afford for him to be absolutely lost consistently and be like, where's Waldo in an NBA postseason? You just can't. So I look back at this Knicks run. It's a run where today, if you're a Knicks fan, there's sorrow. You are angry right now, and you have a bitter taste in your mouth. Because when you get this far and you get this close, and the Knicks were 6 wins away from an NBA championship, and let's be real, even if they went on to go get 2 more victories up against the Indiana Pacers and be 4 wins away from an NBA championship, I don't think many people are picking the Knicks, just like how many people right now aren't picking the Pacers to win the title. So you were close, right? You're in the conference finals. But when you get this close, it stings even more. So I understand why everyone is upset the last 48 hours and everyone's looking for a singular person to blame. But when the dust settles, and I know people aren't going to want to hear this today, but it's the truth. When the dust settles here with the New York Knicks, you're going to look back at this run and you're going to say, that was a memorable run. That was a successful run. Like, heck, if you're 30 years old, if you're me, living in New York City, 30 years old, this is the most tangible success that you could remember the Knicks having in your lifetime. And I know what I said, oh, they got to the conference finals in 2000. They got to the NBA finals before that. You don't remember that if you're 30. You don't. So if you're an older Knicks fan, yes, I understand the frustration. Because some of you may have seen 2 championships. Some of you may have seen a championship. Or it's been so long, you say to yourself, oh, will it ever happen again? Right? I understand if you're in your 70s. If you're in your late 60s and you're rooting for the Knicks. But a lot of new Knicks fans, or a lot of Knicks fans, not even new Knicks fans, have never seen this team go this far. So before the year, if I would have told you they would have made the conference finals, you would have signed for it. If I would have told you they would have beat the Boston Celtics in the NBA playoffs, you would have signed for it. And sure, if I told you they would have beat the Boston Celtics, you probably think you're in the NBA finals. But you beat them in the second round. But this is a run when you look back at it. Back-to-back 50-win seasons for the first time since Raleigh was the coach in 95. First trip to the conference finals in 25 years. It is a positive season. And you'll look back and you'll remember the Jalen Brunson closer and Mikal Bridges coming up big up against the Pacers and up against the Pistons in the elimination game. You'll remember the 2 20-point comebacks up against the Boston Celtics in Game 1 and Game 2. You'll remember Karl Anthony Towns at home in Game 6 saying night-night to the Boston Celtics. Those are what you're going to remember. And sure, when you're there and there's no Cavs, there's no Celtics, there's a Pacers standing in front of the way, did you think they were going to beat the Pacers? Absolutely. I'd be lying to you if I said I expect the Pacers to win that series. I think it was impossible. But I thought the Knicks were the better team, and I thought the Knicks were going to win the series. Most of us overlook the Indiana Pacers and how great they could be. And this is coming from someone that the Pacers are very alive to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the round prior. You know, I picked the Cavs and I picked them in seven, but I was like, that Pacers team is dangerous. That Pacers team scares me. So you look back at this run, you're going to have a lot of fond memories. It stings today, no question. But in terms of what next, it's fascinating. Like, I think Tom Thibodeau is going to be here. You know, will they try to maybe go get Kevin Durant? I don't know if that's the right move for this team. If you could get Giannis, sure. God bless you. Go get Giannis. But I don't think it's going to be easy for the Knicks to get Giannis unless if Giannis says he wants to come here. And I don't know what the trade would be, and you just gave up a lot of your picks. So could you ship Kat? I saw Yahoo say Kat, Kolek, Washington's 2026 protected first-round draft pick and two first-round pick swaps in 2026 to 2030. Like, that doesn't seem enough. But also, who would have thought Luka Doncic would have got traded to the Lakers for Anthony Davis, a first-round pick, and basically that was it. Basically like a bowl of bags after, you know, a bag of balls after that. So it's like, you know, I don't know what it's going to take. If you get Giannis, sure, it'd be wonderful. Get rid of Kat. But in all likelihood, where the East is constructed right now, where Tatum's hurt, the Sixers are injured, right? And who knows if they'll ever get healthy. And when they do get healthy, can they even get to the conference finals? Because they haven't with this run and this team, with Embiid being their guy. You know, the Bucks may not have Giannis. Who knows what star the Heat are going to bring in? And it's like, it's right there once again. So in all likelihood, the Knicks are probably going to run it back and just create a deeper bench. That's what I think is going to happen. But if you could go get a Giannis, you do it. I don't know if I want Kevin Durant on the Knicks, if I'm being honest. I wouldn't hate it, but I don't think it's a great move. So there's going to be people saying, oh, let's blame this person. Let's get a lot of change. The Knicks are probably going to run it back and make some smaller changes that you hope probably pays off a big dividends coming up this time next year. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We go from the NBA on the basketball court right to the ice. We will preview the Stanley Cup Final next. Panthers and Oilers, a rematch a year ago where the Panthers won in seven. Carter Verhaeghe, Mr. Clutch from the Florida Panthers, will join us next.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Three straight years, the Florida Panthers have reached the Stanley Cup Final. They look to win back-to-back Stanley Cups, and that mission gets started coming up on Wednesday night as you have a rematch of the Stanley Cup Final from a year ago where the Florida Panthers will be in Edmonton this time, going up against the Edmonton Oilers. Carter Verhaeghe from the Florida Panthers is here with us right now, and he is Mr. Clutch. In his postseason career, he's had three series-clinching goals, 12-game winners, and five overtime winners as well. And we saw him get another winning goal after an incredible pass by Barkov to punch the Panthers back in the Stanley Cup Final. And Carter Verhaeghe is here with us. Carter, first and foremost, congratulations. Thanks for the time. And how you been?
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And I've been good. I mean, we're just preparing right now for the final. Obviously a little bit of a wait for us, but we're just excited to get things going.
Yeah, well, let me take you back to last week. As you said, it's a little bit of a wait. You just become Mr. Clutch. In these moments, you step up. I know Alexander Barkov did an incredible job getting you the puck, but take me through that game winner that put you guys up in the third period to eventually get that victory up against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, I think, it was late in the third period, tie game. Reinhart made an awesome play to get the puck to Barkey. Barkey kind of did the rest, took on one and two guys behind the net and gave me a nice kind of open net to finish it off. So it was a great play all around.
Yeah, it's unbelievable the run you guys have been on the last 3 years. And for you, whenever a team needs a big moment and your team needs a big moment, you step up and deliver. Where the heck does this clutch gene come from? And how do you keep on delivering in these big moments?
Honestly, I have no idea. I just try and go out there and play the best I can. And obviously, when the stakes are high, this is what you dream out of as a kid. You're not dreaming playing game 31 in the regular season. You're dreaming of playing in big moments. And I think it kind of brings out the kid in you. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. There's just so much more exciting, you know?
Yeah, I know that, right, your mission right now, it's Stanley Cup or bust. It's the repeat of Stanley Cup champions. But you look at what you guys have done the last 3 years. Has it hit you, or is it okay? You don't even look back at what has happened so far, even though you've had a few days as of late, until this run actually ends this year.
Yeah, we're kind of focused on our mission right now. You can't really think about, obviously this team has been so good for the last 3 years, and getting, it's a huge accomplishment to get to the Stanley Cup final any year, and never mind three in a row. But we're focused on a mission. Obviously, maybe in the summer, you'll have time to look back on it, and hopefully it's another series win.
You know, this is the best team in hockey. That's what you guys are. You've been the standard really the last 2 years. I know it all got started in that comeback up against Boston 3 years ago when you guys were down 3-1 in the game seven. You guys were able to get that victory, and you were able to net the game winner to advance to the next round. When you look back at that Boston series from 3 years ago, how did that really change this team, and what did it really unlock with this team when you guys were able to make that comeback and advance to the next round?
Yeah, well, so we had a decent group before that. I think the year before we won the President's Trophy. And I mean, that whole year we were kind of struggling a little bit. We had a new system, new guys on our team trying to kind of fit together. And essentially in that series, everything kind of just came together. We were playing how we wanted to. We went up against one of the best teams of all time, and to be able to come out on top and beat them, obviously it was a huge accomplishment in itself. And I think we just kind of used the momentum, and we gained a ton of confidence on who we are and kind of what we're able to do.
Carter Verhaeghe here with us. The Stanley Cup final does commence on Wednesday. It's a rematch from a year ago as the Panthers are defending Stanley Cup champions going up against the Edmonton Oilers. You know, getting back to the Stanley Cup final now that you've done it three times, how does it compare, the feeling this time around compared to the previous two?
Honestly, it's pretty similar. I mean, at least going in this year, we kind of know what it takes to actually win the thing, which is huge to have that experience. But yeah, I mean, it's nerves. We're excited to get playing. We have full confidence in our group, and we're just excited to get going here. We've been sitting around for too long.
Yeah, how do you think that layoff maybe impacts you guys in a game one coming up on Wednesday night?
I mean, I don't think it's too big of a, like, it's, I think it's been a week, so it's not crazy. I think the first time we went to the finals, we swept Carolina, mm-hmm. and I think we had like 12 or 13 days off, which was, that was a lot. I mean, we didn't know what to do. Guys were pulling pranks in the room. I mean, we were kind of, but this one, I think it's not too bad. The guys are healing up. I think a lot of the guys could use the recovery, so 7 days is enough, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, the reason I ask it is because you look back at the last 3 years, right? In year one, it was a tremendous run. Year two, you guys obviously win the cup. And then this year, it's okay. You're the defending Stanley Cup champions. And when you're defending Stanley Cup champions, you know what that feeling's like. So it's Stanley Cup or bust. It's got to be tough, though, sometimes to mentally withstand all that pressure, where people only go look at this team as a success this year if you guys end up getting four more victories.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's every year, though. Like, we have one goal in mind coming into the season, and that's kind of the culture we built over the last couple of years. We've had our disappointments and failures, and I think every year now we come in with the expectation to win, and we'll do whatever it takes kind of thing. And if we don't win it, it's going to be a failure every year now going.
Yeah, what do you want people to know about this group? You guys have been in the spotlight, like I've been talking about Carter Verhaeghe the last 3 years. I feel like so many people know about you know, the Florida Panthers now, but this group in particular, what do you want people to know since you've been through the journey, right, all throughout this season with this group battling and grinding it out?
Yeah, I think the culture. I think we have such a great culture on the team, and everyone loves each other. It feels like everyone is battling for each other, doing their job to the best they can, kind of for the group. And there's no one selfish or anything like that. Everyone's pulling the same rope, and no one's in it for themselves. You know, everyone wants to do it for the guy next to them. And it's just, I think that's the biggest thing you can take away from our group. It's just very humble and kind of just play for each other kind of group.
And you guys didn't need Brad Marchand, but then you get him. And like, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, that's just stupid good what the Florida Panthers just did. Because you all know, if Brad Marchand's on your team, you love him. If he's not on your team, you hate going up against him. When the organization made that move before the deadline to get Brad, just what did that do for this team, bringing in a player like that to this already impressive core?
Yeah, he's obviously such a great player, and he brings so much. Even you see him on the ice, how great he is, and even in the locker room and being around the guys, he's such a first class guy, and I mean, some people hate him on the ice, but off the ice he's just treats his teammates so well. He's such a nice guy. He brings everyone together, and he has a contagious energy to him that makes you want to work. And he was the captain of the Bruins for a couple of years, and he has that leadership quality. So I can't say enough good things about him. We're so happy to have him on our team, and we wouldn't be here without him. So we're so lucky to have him.
Yeah, I know it's a business, right? These deals happen all the time, but was it a little bit bizarre and an adjustment when you guys were able to land Brad Marchand, where it was like, oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe they were able to pull that off?
A little bit. I didn't know if we were in the market for him, but obviously the management does such a good job here, and they've turned this team around and have started bringing the right players at the right times. And I don't even know how they do it, but it seems like everyone who comes fits the mold. And yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that just fits right in, and from the start, we welcome him with open arms, and he's embraced every opportunity. And like I said, he's such a great guy.
Carter Verhaeghe here with us for a few more moments as the Panthers get set for their quest to go back-to-back as Stanley Cup champions, underway in the Stanley Cup final rematch of a year ago, coming up on Wednesday night against the Oilers. You know, there's so many great players on this team. Reinhardt, Barkov, yourself, Sam Bennett, you know, could go on and on and on. But when I think of the Panthers, the first two names that come to mind are your goalie and Bob, and then also Matthew Tkachuk. What do you want people to know about those two players in particular, and just the elite level that they're able to play in and night out when they're on the ice and healthy?
Yeah, they're both unbelievable players and world class at what they do. I mean, with Bob, he's been around for a long time, won Vezina trophies, always been a top goalie in the league, and it's just so impressive with him to see even as he gets old, he takes such good care of his body. How he's doing he's getting older, and he's doing the splits, acrobatic saves, and he's just unbelievable to watch every day, and such a great pro. And I'd say the same with Matthew. He's so intense when he gets on the ice. He sees the ice so well, makes unbelievable passes. He brings different elements to the game, like his physicality. He can make a big hit or score a big goal. And I think he really understands the game at certain times and certain moments, which is huge. And we're lucky to have both of those guys on our team for the Panthers.
You know what it's like, Carter, and get into a Stanley Cup final and lose it and then winning it the next year. You guys had an unbelievable series last year up against the Oilers. We all remember you guys getting out to that big lead, and then you end up winning in Game 7. Just how about this matchup, seeing it once again, knowing what those guys have in that locker room with the Edmonton Oilers as well?
Yeah, we're not taking them lightly, that's for sure. They're in the Stanley Cup final for a reason, and we saw it last year. They're such a dangerous team. I mean, they have so much talent. They played so well during the playoffs. It feels like they're never out of any game. So it's for us just to kind of learn, take what we did last year and kind of learn from it. And there's definitely times where I think experience is going to help playing in their building and stuff like that. So it's going to be a good matchup, and we're excited for it.
Yeah, I know how great that Oilers team is, and you have two of the top five best players in the league, Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. You think it's safe to categorize this one? You guys are the best team in hockey, and you're going up against the best player in hockey in Connor McDavid. Does that seem right to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a headline, but I mean, we don't really view it like that. They are the best. Connor's obviously such a world-class player and the best player in the game, but we kind of just take it game by game and stick to what we do, kind of thing.
Well, hey, congratulations on getting this far once again. I know you want to get four more. We appreciate you carving out some time for us today, and good luck starting on Wednesday night. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
It's time to ask the pros. Your listener gets to ask us a question. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet your question at INF Sportsnet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Be listening later in the program. We might answer your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. I was in the newsroom during the break, and I was talking to our pal Paul Rosenberg from down the hall. And Paul Rosenberg just was taking out a few food items, and he had a huge cookie, sugar cookie with rainbow sprinkles, which is a phenomenal cookie, right? Usually see those types of cookies a lot of times at a diner, right? And those cookies are really damn good. It's like a massive cookie. It's like kind of like the size of like your head, Stu, honestly, like was the size of this cookie. Not that you have a large cabeza,
wow, yeah,
but it was a big cookie. So I said to Paul Rosenberg, oh, let me see that cookie. Like, just taking a look at the cookie because it's a big cookie. And he goes, yeah, I'm eating like a pig today. I go, any reason? You know, it's a Monday. It was about like 3:35 p.m. Eastern time. Like, why are you eating like a pig today? He went on a three-day juice cleanse where he only had juice, right? Like one of these cleanses. And he had six bottles of juice a day for three straight days. So that's what he did. Have you ever done a juice cleanse, still?
I have never, ever done a juice cleanse. No.
Do you have any desire to do a juice cleanse?
Not really.
Samter, have you ever done a juice cleanse?
Not a juice cleanse per se, but I've done some
ayahuasca?
Other sorts of cleansing, yes.
What do you mean other sort of cleansing?
There are certain kinds of cleanses that a proctologist might want you to do when they do some checkups.
Okay.
That you do a full on, you drink this thing, and then for like 24 hours.
Oh, like you're talking about when you get a colonoscopy? Is
basically, yes. Okay. So I've done that kind of a cleanse, but never actually a juice cleanse.
But 3 days of just juice? Like, first off, you think he only had juice? You tell me, Paul Rosenberg, I think he lives alone. You tell me when you're in your house and you walk past the pantry, and, like, even if it's like a few, like hands of like trail mix or something like that. You got to like, even it's like healthy stuff like carrots or a cucumber or something in your fridge. Oh, an apple. When you're going three straight days of juice, you're not maybe going to the pantry and taking even a chip or something like that. I don't know. Stu, that's where it's kind of hard for me to believe that he only had juice for three straight days.
Takes a lot of willpower because, again, if you're walking by the fridge or the cabinet or whatever's there, that's tough.
You know, we're one big happy family here. How about Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week? We just do a juice cleanse. You guys in?
I mean, if I have to, I'll do it, but it's not something I would want to do.
We can see, like, who will cave first?
Who will break first?
We'll put, like, $1,000 on the line. We'll put it in a pot, and who ends up, you know, we'll put a GoPro on you so you can follow you all through the night, all through the day, and we see who breaks first here. I think it's a good programming idea.
This is really tough. My love for money and my love for food are going to be at an impasse.
Santa's at a crossroads here. He's like, dollars or donuts? Dollars or I'm going to take the donuts. Honestly, Santa, I think you would break first.
$1,000 is a lot of money.
I know. Every day, though, I walk in the newsroom. You got something new out there. What? You had some dip today? What was that? What was that dip that you got?
No. We went to this great deli. I got some delicious pastrami, and there was a huge bowl of Russian that came with it. Russian dressing.
That's what it was.
So I was dipping into the Russian.
Yeah, I was like, I walked in the newsroom. I go, there's a big thing of dip, and there's like crackers. Not the Ben Horowitz dip from back in the day around here. As that dude, when I was doing the overnight, literally went to go take a sip of his coffee or soda, and he ended up drinking his dip spit, which I'm annoyed we didn't record everything back then in terms of on video, because that would have been a viral video. That would have been great for the show. But yeah, I walked to the newsroom, and Santa had some big concoction of what looked like, I thought it was buffalo chicken dip, if I was being honest, but that was just Russian dressing.
Oh yeah. But I mean, this is from like a great deli on Long Island, Lido Deli. Beautiful.
And you just leave that out on the counter?
Well, I was running to get back in here, but I'm going to go put it away.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I go, not that I am understanding of how everything works in the world, but when it comes with food, if you leave that out on the counter too long, it probably gets like nasty and soupy and then not good, and then you get a stomachache. So, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everyone was all right. All right, anyway, we had an interview with Zach Jackson, who does a great job covering the Cleveland Browns for The Athletic. And I'm listening through the entire interview, right? Obviously, I was hosting the interview. And he kind of painted the picture in Cleveland Browns camp where it's almost two quarterback competitions going on at once. It's a competition for the starter. That really feels like it's between Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett. And then there's a competition of who's going to be the backup, because we all believe that Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders are going to be on the team. You know, if Shedeur was the third round pick, everyone, right, as Shedeur, people think he's going to make it as a fifth round pick. But if Dylan Gabriel was the fifth round pick, I wonder how much more open of a competition, or how much open of a competition, but, you know, would there be a way to keep both Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco? Like, when you draft Shedeur in the fifth, I don't think you're cutting Shedeur. You draft Dylan Gabriel in the fifth, I think you could cut Dylan Gabriel. But having Dylan Gabriel and Shador both on the team right now, I don't think either are getting cut. So there's going to be an odd man out, and it's either going to be Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett. But anyway, we had Zach Jackson on, and he was talking about the two quarterback competitions really going on between four guys right now. And he had this to say about how Shador's looking and how Dylan Gabriel is.
Joe Flacco clearly has the strongest arm, throws the best ball. Everybody wants to see Shador. He's been impressive. You talk to people in the building, they say he's been impressive. He's only been in the building like 16 days at this point. What this competition is, Zach, right now, for at least two more months and probably beyond that, it's two different competitions. It's Flacco versus Pickett for the starting job. And then it's the two rookies positioning themselves. And I'm telling you, like, I like what I see from Shador. I mean that. But I don't know that either one of these rookies will ever play, let alone this year. I don't know that they'll be ready. We just don't know at this early stage.
Wow.
Dylan Gabriel does not look like an NFL quarterback to me, like 0%. So I don't know what's going to happen. Right. And then I just don't think any other team was taking him in the top 100 or probably the top 150. If I'm wrong and the Cleveland Browns have their quarterback, that'd be great. But if it's Dylan Gabriel, I will be beyond shocked.
So I think you need to separate really two things, because he did make it clear, Zach Jackson, when he was on with us, that there were 3 days of OTAs last week. The media was only able to see one. And right, there's been a lot of positive reviews off that one session that the media was able to see about Shador Sanders. So I just think when you look at the tape, right, and you see Dylan Gabriel, and maybe he didn't mean this in practice, the one practice, because how bad could one practice be? And even so, then it's only one practice. Like, I think most people, when you went through the draft process on Dylan Gabriel, didn't think he was going to be a pro quarterback. Now, there's different levels of pro quarterback. Starting quarterback or a backup quarterback. If you want to classify backup quarterback as Dylan Gabriel being a pro quarterback, all right, that's your right. But when I hear pro quarterback, I'm thinking a guy that could be a starting quarterback in the NFL for like at least five seasons. And even someone who was more optimistic than most on Dylan Gabriel, acknowledging, hey, I don't really love this quarterback draft class. I think Cam Ward's the best. Then Shador Sanders is two. Then there's a large drop off. I had Jalen Milroe three. And then I did put in at the fourth spot Dylan Gabriel before putting Jackson Dart in at five. I didn't think much of Dylan Gabriel as a pro quarterback. Just like how I kind of thought Quinn Ewers, where I looked at him, I said, really good college quarterback. I don't think he's a pro quarterback. I think you could say the same thing about Dylan Gabriel. And Dylan Gabriel, by the way, he had some late first-round buzz when the season ended from some people. It was like some late buzz. But really, for the most part, in the draft process in February, in March, in April, I remember talking about this on the air. You would look at these rankings, you would get 7-8 quarterbacks into this draft class, and there wasn't even a mention of Dylan Gabriel. So Zach Jackson saying that Dylan Gabriel doesn't look like a pro quarterback, I don't think is that crazy. The part that I couldn't believe, and I even pressed back on Zach, was the part where he's like, I can't even tell you if either of those guys are going to be able to start games this year for the Cleveland Browns. Well, like, one of those guys, maybe not both, but one of those guys will definitely at one point start this year for the Cleveland Browns. Number one, the Cleveland Browns aren't any good. Number two, their schedule is brutal to start the season. So let's say you throw Joe Flacco to the Wolves. Do I think Joe Flacco's getting through the entirety of the season as a starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns? No, because that would imply two things. One, Joe Flacco plays at a really high level, and two, it also means that the Cleveland Browns have enough wins where you're not dying to go see someone younger. If this was last year, Joe Flacco on the Browns, different conversation. The last time Joe Flacco was on the Browns, he took him to the playoffs in a 6-7, whatever it was, game stretch, and it was unbelievable. But the Browns didn't bring him back because they were still trying to suck up and do favors to Deshaun Watson. They were afraid about Deshaun Watson's feelings because they knew, right, you bring in Joe Flacco and Deshaun Watson doesn't play well, fans are going to call for Joe Flacco because he just took the team to the playoffs. But last year, the Indianapolis Colts benched Anthony Richardson. And they went to Joe Flacco, and Joe Flacco wasn't good enough to hold a job. So why do I think Joe Flacco is going to make it through 17 games this year as a Browns starting quarterback on, and I don't even think that highly of the Indianapolis Colts, but the Colts are still better right now entering this season than the Cleveland Browns, and the Colts will go through their multitude of quarterbacks as well this year. So I look at the Browns. You're going to throw Flacco or Pickett. I think Flacco will win the job, and then Pickett will be elsewhere. And maybe that's why they're hyping up Pickett right now to try to make the market be a little bit richer or try to make the market be a little bit richer than what it should be. But you have the Bengals. You're at the Ravens. You have the Packers, you're at the Lions, you're playing a game overseas up against the Vikings, and you get the Steelers. If Joe Flacco wins one game there, I'll be, like, impressed. You know, maybe two at most. But in all likelihood, you're going to have two wins or fewer going to the middle of October when you start a stretch up against a Dolphins team that's descending, a Patriot team that they made improvements, but I don't still think they're going to be a good football team. And then you play the Jets, who the Jets have been lousy for, like, outside of 2 years for practically my entire life. So you look at this, yeah, Flacco will get thrown to the Wolves or Pickett. I think it'll be Flacco thrown to the Wolves early. And then by October 19th, the earliest, and by November 9th, the latest, you're going to go to either Shador or Dylan Gabriel. And whoever they go to, if it's Shador, it's up to him to not lose the job and then to go to Dylan. If it's up to Dylan, it's up to him and not lose the job until you go to Shador. But play the best guy when you go to that guy. I understand wanting to put, and I would prefer to just see Shador or Dylan Gabriel from week one, or even Kenny Pickett for that matter. But if you're going to throw Pickett or you're going to throw Flacco to the Wolves early, fine. First 6 weeks, I get it. But then you're going to have to go to either your fifth round pick or your third round pick. And I hope the ego of the front office doesn't play Dylan Gabriel because they drafted him earlier. And right, the coaching staff as well. Play the best guy at that point. If you're going to make a change, play the best player. That's what I want to see. And I do believe that Shador Sanders will end up being a better quarterback than Dylan Gabriel. So, in my opinion, Shador should be the first guy off the bench. But that's why you have a competition, and we'll see what happens throughout the year.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday you'll hear us and see us chatting with big name celebrities.
And every Monday you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.